I'm the sports professor Rick Haro with Beyond the Scoreboard, an inside look at the trillion-dollar business of sports. Couldn't have come at a better time. Major League Baseball heating up for the summer. NHL and NBA Finals almost over, but at a crescendo. NASCAR and IndyCar struggling for relevance as they move forward. And the NFL never sleeps. Got a lot of issues that cross-cut a lot of different sports today. And if you want to look at our 15 topics for the week, CSNNE.com. Do the same thing in Chicago. And if you want to join us, subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, and Audio Boom as we take you through a variety of sports issues as well. Ending with Brian Kopp, the president of North America Catapult. Emerging technology, significant experience, developed a lot of technology for baseball, as well as wearables, as well as other issues for consumers. And we'll get into that after we cover some of the issues around all of sports today. Here are some of the top issues. Well, we got to start with the NBA Finals, and we know the Celtics and the Bulls are not in, but this year's NBA Finals are historic circumstances, but also for the games. The cheapest ticket on StubHub for Sunday night, $661, $10,000 for courtside seats. It's huge. Cleveland fans shelling out an average of $1,300 per ticket for Game 3. And TV ratings down slightly for Warriors-Cavs 3.0. If LeBron James and company come roaring back in some context, expect the ratings to be a little higher. Let's remember, at this airing and this publication, they're 14-0, and who's to say anybody will beat them? But we've all been wrong before. And by the way, simultaneously, hockey, yeah, Pittsburgh, been there, done that, but they're looking for dynasty. But in the NHL, the football and music-loving fans in Nashville embracing their upstart Predators to such a degree that you'd think that Music City had always been a hockey town. 50,000 fans stuffed Broadway downtown, 18,000 cramming into the Bridgestone Arena for the first ever Final Cup game there. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman insisted the league won't go to Korea in 2018 and has announced Tampa being the all-star home. NHL Commissioner Bill Daly, deputy commissioner, said that the $73.4 million salary cap before an inflator is applied is a testament to the league's growth. And by the way, staying on the Nashville story, came alive for its first Stanley Cup final. More of the same expected through the series, whether they win or not. Certainly the Sun Belt strategy is impacting positively, at least in Nashville. The Titans sitting across the river and waiting to see what they can do. Well, there's one thing they can do, rake in money from liquor ads. An abrupt change to its decades-old advertising policy. The NFL this season will allow its television partners to accept commercials for distilled spirits. The NFL said that it'll accept no more than 4 30-second hard liquor spots per game, with a limit of 2 such spots in any quarter or during halftime. The broadcast partners can run 2 spots in the pregame and the postgame programs. The ads have got to include a prominent social responsibility message and cannot have a football theme or target underage drinkers. And while described as a one-season test, an NFL source said the policy is expected to become permanent. And here's my take. So far this upcoming season, by the way, the NFL relaxed its rules on touchdown celebrations, relaxed its rules on liquor ads. How about an adjustment to the league's punitive policy regarding players' use of medical marijuana? It'll be next. I'm not sure. It's a rumor. Just saying. Well, let's shift over to golf. And no conversation about golf has to avoid Tiger Woods. His Memorial Day DUI arrest raised many questions regarding the status of his endorsement deals and his legacy within the game. And as we know, many of his companies felt burned by his 2009 sex scandal becoming public, and they showed their emotions by dumping him as a brand rep. The same could happen to Woods now. He's more expendable these days as a brand ambassador because his playing career, serious jeopardy. And despite having barely played this season, he's still the fourth highest player on the tour, making more than $34 million off the course. Nike says no current change in their deal. They've endorsed him and vice versa since 1996, and he's thought to earn about $10 million per year from that deal. Other sponsors, Bridgestone, Monster, and Rolex, declined to comment on the status of their relationship with him. And here's my take. It's hard to reconcile the dominant world number one with the sad figure shown in police videos made public. And while Woods and other sponsors currently remain mum, it's all but certain that his sponsor portfolio will lose a marquee name or two. People in New England thought he might be back for some event, and certainly not this year. But when you take a look at some other positive things that are happening in sports, in golf, how about contrasting Tiger Woods with Arnold Palmer? His life was a rich one in ways much more than on the course. His estate, according to Forbes, valued at over $875 million. Although he only made about $3.6 million on course over his career, believe it or not, his charismatic nature allowed him to earn 240 times that in other endeavors. WESH-TV in Orlando obtained the court documents that detail those to receive some of Palmer's inheritance. Gifts, beneficiaries, claims for his charitable foundation, leaving most of his vast estate to be divided equally among his two daughters. Palmer's foundation filed a claim seeking nearly $10 million to continue its charitable work, including the Children's Hospital built in his name, the Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Babies, named for his late first wife. His will provides $10 million for his widow Kathleen, $5 million to satisfy creditors, $25,000 each to 8 employees. His daughters equally divide the remaining assets. And my take is this. While Palmer was considered a generous soul, the 25,000 gifts employees, many of whom had been loyal to the king for decades, has been frankly shocking since he couldn't have built the business empire without them, trying to figure out what it's all about. I guess that's what probate lawyers are all for. Well, those are interesting things in golf and somewhat fairly seamy, but there are a couple of good corporate things that are happening on the women's side. Preparing to host the LPGA Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship presented by P&G, Walmart and other retailers are attempting to compete with Amazon, tapping experts to make sure they're stocking the best merchandise. Walmart added Olympic gold medal winning swimmer Nathan Adrian to offer advice on everything from swim caps to goggles. Walmart said it'll be hiring hundreds of specialists over the next 2 months in categories ranging from fishing gear to shoes. The concept of using trusted sources to hawk merchandise, certainly nothing new, in retailing operations especially. But in sporting goods and related offerings, Walmart seems to be going beyond traditional endorsement deals by putting its experts in the role of business advisors. And my take is this. Look for the retailing giant and proud Northwest Arkansas patron to incorporate one of the LPGA stars it now supports into an advisory role similar to Adrian's sometime in the near future as well. And then, in a taste of what the LPGA may experience later this month, about 60 protesters showed up outside Trump National Golf Course in Sterling, Virginia, to protest the current administration ahead of the first round of the Senior PGA Championship, the KitchenAid tournament. Trump didn't make an appearance, but he had Donald and Eric walk the course at various points during the week. New York Times noted it was an unusual sight, seeing protesters gathering near the course on land and water, objecting to the way they see conflicts of interest between Trump's business interests and his duties in office. The activists descended on the area around Trump National Golf Club, holding placards on a street corner and shouting outside the tournament gates. And my take is this. The general consensus is that golf-loving presidents, from Eisenhower onward, are good for the game because of the exposure they create. Whether Trump will buck this trend, as he does so many other trends, remains to be seen. Well, there are other golf issues, and talking about something that happens that is not necessarily political, but started that way, the President's Cup, adding Alfa Romeo as a global sponsor for the 2017 event, set for the end of September at the Liberty National Golf Club in New Jersey. Terms not disclosed, but Alfa Romeo becomes the third global partner in the biennial PGA Tour-themed event with Rolex, a global partner since 2008, Citi, 2010. The deal includes on-site branding and hospitality, advertising across the Golf Channel and NBC, and all the kind of exposure you would expect. The last President's Cup took place in South Korea in 2015, with the U.S. winning for the sixth successive time. And my take is this. While the President's Cup doesn't quite have the prestige of the Ryder Cup, the top-level participation of Citi, Rolex, and now Alfa Romeo confirm it's an event with continued and growing international clout as golf continues to grow globally. Let's talk baseball and the business of baseball, something that's near and dear to New Englanders' hearts. The Cubs and team chairman Tom Ricketts are extending the scope of their fast-growing business, creating Marquee Sports Entertainment to serve as a centralized sales and marketing agency for the various Ricketts sports and entertainment assets. MSE, a separate entity from the Cubs and Wrigley Field, will pool the Cubs' sales, sponsorship, event, and marketing verticals, Wrigley Rooftops, the new park at Wrigley, American Airlines Conference Center, and their new ballpark at Jason Headquarters, and the forthcoming boutique Hotel Zachary. The new Chicago-based agency will be housed within the Cubs headquarters building. Ultimately, MSE intends to provide sales, consulting, and other sports and entertainment clients services similar to what Bostonians know as Fenway Sports Management, the Red Sox sister entity. The creation of MSE is in part fueled by an expansion in non-baseball events at Wrigley Field. Yet another example of on-field success fueling business success. And the Cubs have been in a slump, at least not where they were predicted, but the exponential growth of the brand allowing their blue empire to expand regardless of the box scores. We all know about Fenway Sports and Liverpool and the Red Sox, etc. This is a similar kind of model. Other issues in baseball, by the way, not so good. The Marlins sale took an unexpected turn. Florida Governor Jeb Bush dropped his pursuit of the team. Problematic issue had arisen whether Bush could be the group's control person while contributing just $20 million toward a reported sale of $1.3 billion. Bloomberg reported Bush's departure was a result of a falling out between one-time presidential candidate and his investment partner, Derek Jeter. The former New York Yankee, who wanted to change the terms of their partnership to give himself complete control over business and baseball operations within 3 years of the purchase. Bush and Jeter had originally agreed to collaborate as general partners, but Jeter will now reportedly pursue a bid with a group of investors whose identities have not been disclosed. Rival bids led by co-founder Tag Romney also being considered. He co-founded Solomir Capital and maybe some others. Looks like Romney may be the real control person in this saga. Stay tuned. New England roots. We may have another New Englander running a team in baseball. And across the pond for baseball, another issue, finally. In the latest attempt by one of America's big four sports leagues to expand globally, MLB will host a home run derby at Hyde Park in London on July 4, featuring former players Cliff Floyd, Sean Green, and Carlos Pena. MLB promoting both the Red Sox and Dodgers during the festivities, encouraging fans to take a side and pick whoever and what city they prefer. The players will be divided up on two teams during the derby. The trio will then be joined by stars of football, cricket, and hockey. The event is part of MLB Battlegrounds, which is described as a series of immersive baseball experiences. It'll include an incredible collision of sport, culture, and tech, said Floyd. The game of baseball is great, and to be a part of it is amazing. This is a great initiative to jumpstart something that has been lacking, and my take is this. We've already talked about Boston reaching across the pond. Here is all of baseball doing it. The NFL has seen tremendous success with its international series in London, to the extent groundwork being laid for a permanent franchise there, and as we all contemplate, will baseball be next? And the real issue here also is the fact that baseball reaches the consumer in all different ways. We have somebody with us who can not only talk about what a startup business is, but also how to use baseball as a platform to advance technology. Brian Kopp is president of North America for Catapult. He was the 2000 Innovator of the Year, the company was. It's a technology measuring device for fitness, wellness, and performance. It was adopted last year by Major League Baseball to wear as part of their uniform. He served at SVP of Sports Solutions for Stats, Inc. He received his MBA from Northwestern and his BA in Economics from Wabash College. We caught up with him at the Sloan MIT conference. But how can measuring physical attributes show up on the uniforms of Major League Baseball players? And how can Major League Baseball embrace a startup company, not only for the Red Sox, but for everybody else? Listen to Brian Kopp.
Sports Professor Rick Haro, Sloan Analytics, MIT Conference. Again, this is the best first-rate conference, 11th year. We understand it's getting bigger and better every single year with a lot more focus with clients, service providers, students. Everybody kind of knows how to mix with each other these days, and entrepreneurs have a better idea of exactly what they want. And they also focus on some startups, and also startups that really have reached the next level. They've perfected their product. They know what they're doing. Brian Kopp's one of those guys. Catapult, President North America.
Yes.
Not President World, so get there in a little while. So talk to us a little bit about Catapult, where it's been, where it's going.
Sure. So Catapult is an Australian-based company, and what we do is wearable analytics for elite and sub-elite and eventually just about every athlete. So what we do is we have a wearable device that we create, but it's really about data we can capture off athletes while you're playing the sport. So there's a lot you can do in a lab, but what we do is we have wearable device you wear while you're actually out there playing the sport, and it's around monitoring what you do, increasing your performance, trying to mitigate risks of injury, and when you are injured, get you back on the field.
So this is one of those devices that can't be very intrusive or people wouldn't be wearing them.
Correct.
So tell us about it.
Sure. So it's a device that you wear in a compression shirt. There's an example. I'll give it to you. So not very big. You wear it on your back between your shoulder blades. And what it captures is all the micro movements of your body. So it knows when you're running, speed and distance. It knows when you change direction. It knows when you're jumping. And it collects all this data on that device, or it can stream it live onto a software. So you know in practice what you're doing, in games where it's allowed what you're doing. And with this one device, we can measure a lot about what the athlete's doing when they're actually out there playing the sport.
How many competitors are in the space with you? Is this it?
No, we're by far the market leader. We have 1,200 clients around the world. I think the next closest competitor has, 200. So we've been doing this for a decade in Australia, out of Australia. Here in the U.S., it's really grown in the last couple of years. So there are a lot of emerging companies trying to put sensors on athletes, but to us, it's not about the hardware. The hardware is an enabler to getting the data. So we spend a lot of time on analyzing that data. It's why we're here at this conference, trying to talk to people that can help us take it to the next level. So it's really this data allows us to get the data we need, this device does, but it's really about what you do with it and make it as specific to the
athlete. Well, let's talk about both of those, though. What is the biggest market disruptor point of uniqueness down the road for you? Is it the flexibility of the device itself or the diverse application of the data that you receive?
You know, we always thought it was going to be about the device becoming commoditized. We think that's less likely just because there's only so far you can go with the devices. We really think it's going to be about the data, making it sport specific. So we do a lot of work on turning our analytics into something that's specific to a sport like basketball, football, hockey. A new sport we're going to work in is baseball. Major League Baseball is allowing these devices to be worn in games this year. So being able to get that type of data in games for a sport like baseball is brand new. So it's going to be about analytics, but it's also going to be about connecting the dots with other parts of what you do. So we last year acquired Exos, which is a video platform company. So taking the data we have, connecting it with video, so you know not just how hard were you working, but what were you doing? Let's go look at the video of that instance as well.
So, Brian, tell me what you think is going to be the easiest path for universal adoption at the sport level. Are the teams going to mandate their players wearing it because they see it as a competitive advantage? Are the leagues going to say you ought to wear it? Are the insurance providers? Who's going to push it to the next level?
Yeah, it's a good question. We're talking to all of the leagues at various stages about how it benefits their athletes. We're obviously working a lot with the teams. I think the players have to be part of the conversation. You're putting this device on a player, so the players union, getting them comfortable with the device, showing them that it's a value to them, showing them that it helps them to extend their career, it helps them get back on the field and ultimately sign a next big contract if you're a professional player. But even down to the youth level, we're starting to work with high school athletes to say, hey, it's not just about increasing your performance, but how hard are you working? Let's not overwork high school kids that are trying to make it to the next level or what they're doing throughout the chain. So I think there's going to be a lot of people involved in the conversation, as there should be. We haven't quite gotten to the insurance companies, but I'm sure that'll come at some point down the line.
Of course it will. And are there any leagues that are less malleable than others? I'd say?
They're different stages of this.
Right.
In college, we're allowed in games, which is great because then we can look at game and practice data. In most professional leagues, we're not yet, but that's a conversation we're having with both the leagues and the players' union to answer questions because they should ask questions.
Right.
It's a new information. You don't want it to be used the wrong way. You want the athletes to be comfortable with it. The teams get value. The leagues be comfortable. So, like I said, Major League Baseball is allowing it in games. Some of the other leagues are not quite there yet, but we're in those discussions.
And without getting inside baseball, so to speak, what's the prototypical business deal that you would put forth with a team or a
sure.
league or an individual?
So we have a subscription model. So what we provide is not only a hardware, but also a software and a service. So they pay us a subscription license, an annual license, which typically gives them access to not only the hardware, but our software and our support resources, because we have a number of analytics sports scientists on staff that provide support. So it is a software model that we provide to people.
Are we going to transcend into the consumer market in the not-too-distant future like a Fitbit, or is there a line that you're drawing?
No, I mean, we think that this type of device applies all the way down the chain. So not just professional, college, high school, but eventually what we call prosumer, people that are still part of teams, that are serious about sport, may not be doing it at a collegiate or a professional level, but are still serious about sport. Because what we allow you to do is maximize what your output is and keep you from doing too much.
Right.
So that applies even for me when I'm trying to play in my old man's basketball league. It still applies to making sure you don't push yourself too hard.
That's a greater segue to an even older man. So what about lazy people who just want to make it look like they know what they're doing, right?
There you go. I'm sure we can come up with something.
Yeah, exactly. The remedial version, ladies and gentlemen. So let's talk about the business side of this, the business show, after all. So perfected in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do you make the decision to launch in an entirely different continent? Do you patent first? Do you do proof of concept with teams or leagues first? How do you enter another market?
Yeah, it came naturally because teams started hiring Australian sports scientists. And they said, hey, we got this device down in Australia you should use. So it happened gradually through that. Certainly we applied and did all the patents, made sure we had all the protections, and then we started building the team. So I joined about 3 years ago, and in that time we've built out a team to better service this market. But it really started with the teams themselves seeing a need for this type of coverage and information, and now we're making it more specific to sports here in the U.S. like football and baseball.
The founders had a vision and an epiphany, and it worked in Australia. Was there a similar magic moment to say, let's take it to the States?
A lot of it started with Florida State football. The year they won the national championship, they were very vocal
Helps.
With the fact that Catapult, not just this technology that we're hitting, they mentioned Catapult by name. Jimbo Fisher gave us a lot of credit for how they were able to keep their players healthy and on the field. And that was back in a few years ago, and it kind of took off from there. Because once that got out, everyone's like, what is this this Australian mystery technology that's helping everybody out?
Are you guys past the point of the normal angel investor scrambling for money process?
We're actually a publicly traded company in Australia. Still pretty small, but growing. We are now profitable with our acquisition we made last year. But we're growing very well, and it helps to have a great story to bring back to the Australian investors about what we're doing in the U.S. and Europe and other markets. Luckily we've gone past the point of where a lot of technologies are. If we've crossed that chasm of getting enough adoption, then we have a stable foundation we can build on.
Well, that's a really interesting perception, because the noise out there is everybody's perfect idea. And the smaller sound, the crickets you hear, are the perfect ideas going to market.
Yeah. Well, so it's what we hope that we've built over time with the clients we have, the credibility we have, is a platform that we're always looking around to see what those ideas are. Because if we see a good idea, we can enable it on our platform. And rather than these companies out here starting from scratch, you now have a universe of 1,200 clients, diversity around the world that you can leverage off of the Catapult platform.
Are we moving toward an era in your world with one device fits all? Do we have some common thing that can tell time and do everything else, or is that just not something that's
going to happen? No, I mean, you hear people say that there'll be multiple devices all over a player or an athlete. I think that's hard. People don't want to wear
sure.
many things. I think our device is worn with a compression shirt. One of the things we're looking at right now is how the smart garment industry is evolving. So can we integrate what we collect, which is what your body moves, with what garments collect in terms of your heart rate, your breathing rate, and how your body responds to that movement. If you have those two pieces together, you have everything you need.
So an entrepreneur who is a classic entrepreneur for a couple reasons, you got a product that proven, but not here, and then you take it here. What does somebody in your position worry about when he gets up in the morning?
Many things.
Business-wise. I'm not interested. We don't have enough time for the other.
Worried about what my five kids are up to. But I think that the biggest challenge we have is there's so many opportunities that we got to prioritize them. Yeah. We don't want to go after too many things.
Good point.
That we delude ourselves. There's also an element of what else is out there, what's around the corner that could be disruptive. And luckily, we've got to the point where it'd be very difficult to disrupt our position. But that's where we want to look out to make sure if there are disruptions, let's be in front of it and let's be a part of the disruption rather than making it happen to us.
And I'm sure entrepreneurs have a collateral issue and concern about making sure you cover the market, stay ahead of your competitors, and not get out there so quickly you're diluted or overexposed.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I guess that's one of those issues, along with your five kids, that deals with itself. All right, where are you 5 years from now?
I think that we are everywhere. I think that we're at every sport. I think we're in games and practice. I think that when you go to play pickup basketball, we're there. We want these devices to be on every athlete that's playing, that is serious about sport. And if we accomplish that goal, it'll unlock so much information to help athletes, to drive into new areas, to eventually change the way the sport is played, potentially change the rules of the sport to make it safer. So there's a lot of ways that we can do, and I think you'll see that in the next 5 years.
And just another sales question relative to the next 5 years.
Yep.
Volume sale, league down, advantage of that is you're sold in all the time versus the kind of competitive advantage, I want to be the first and be out ahead of everybody.
Yep.
How do those two juxtapose in your world?
Yeah, it's interesting because we're doing both a bottom-up and a top-down approach.
Yeah.
Because the answer is whatever approach gets us in the door. So we're having league-wide discussions, not only in this country, but around the world where there's a media angle to it. You put a device on a player and you're putting stuff on TV. You see that more in international markets than you do here yet, but that's a top-down approach that provides value, opens up new value, gives you that volume. But also, we do the bottoms-up because it's important that each individual team understands and uses this data. The competitive advantage is interesting because this is a very personal device. What it measures from you is very different than what it measures from me. We could do the exact same drill and the outputs would be slightly different because our bodies are different. So it's a very personal device. So we still want to make sure that we're providing that bottoms-up approach to helping the teams unlock value. But the top-down is important too because the leagues are around the world and the rights holders are going to be a big part of this.
So ladies and gentlemen, in a tempest of everybody's perfect ideas, this one stands out as far as ingenuity, commitment, and it's really in the market and it really works. Ron, thank you very much.
Thanks,
my friend.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Brian Kopp.
Well, we'd like to thank Brian Kopp and Catapult for their insight, and we'd also like to thank you for listening. Well, that's our show for the day, ladies and gentlemen. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. Look for us on Stitcher, Google Play, and Audioboom. And if you want the 15 to watch, log in on csnne.com. And Chicago folks, you do the same. Like to thank Tanner Simpkins and Jason Levine for putting the show together. And we thank you all for listening and watching. And join us once again next week when we go Beyond the Scoreboard.